You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Touchdown, Washington! What a play call!
You're listening to the best of the Commanders.
And it is good! Washington wins!
A weekly mix of 106.7 The Fan and 980 The Team's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
So the injury bug biting the Washington Commanders just a few weeks before the start of the regular season. Bad news yesterday, Washington Commanders defensive tackle Johnny Newton has undergone surgery for a torn pec and is expected to miss significant time with his 2026 return timeline still uncertain at this point.
It's interesting, though. I put it out on Twitter last night.
He's
going to
be gone for an extended period.
And I wrote, big deal or little deal? And most of the Commanders fans were very cynical. And
they're what,
like, he's a sixth defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Just mocking him saying that they were
fine.
Yeah,
but they were going to use him.
No, they were going to use him. It hurts. It's not going to say it doesn't hurt.
It hurts the depth.
It's not
devastating. It's more than a little deal.
It's not Tunsil.
It's at least the medium deal.
I don't think so. It's devastating at all.
Well, definitely actually. Not devastating.
I mean, but
what's devastating is if it keeps just adding up.
Well, that's the problem. They have a list of like 10, 12 guys.
I know.
And the one that I'm the most concerned about is Allegretti, who Keimer's reporting went into the blue tent yesterday just after on Tuesday when we were there. He had a limited opportunity. They gave him like 15 reps. He was supposed to ramp up in pads yesterday, and then he had to leave, right? So presumably the calf still isn't right, and we've got an issue at center. We got an issue. At deep tackle, I think we're going to be okay with Payne, with Kinlaw, with Settle.
Settle's banged up, too. He's nursing a calf injury.
Settle's
right
been
now.
Out
that's,
for
that, that's one I would worry
so that's
about.
A little,
Shy Tuttle, Amenihu. They have, remember, they brought in Brian Cowart. Mm-hmm. I think actually, a tackle will be okay. No, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, because you have your starters.
We have our starters, and I think we have some depth.
Yeah,
Johnny
Newton
has been okay.
The depth is banged up.
Yeah.
I mean, like...
Okay, Shy Tuttle might be banged up, but I don't think Amenihu is.
No, I'm
brought in Cowart,
Newton
who's a veteran.
Newton's
gone.
Settle.
Newton's gone.
Yeah,
right.
Newton's
going to
be out.
Newton's gone.
I'm going to guess.
He's dead.
I'm going to guess the rest of the season.
He's
probably,
gone.
Yeah.
He's like Tunsil. Dead.
Yep.
Gone. So you might as well not even talk
devastating,
about
devastating, no, but it's a factor.
I don't think it's devastating.
No, it's a factor.
But I think
though.
If we lose Allegretti, it's going to be pretty devastating because we don't have anything yet. I guess we're just going to wait until somebody cuts a veteran center.
Is this something, is this a blight on Adam Peters? We were talking about this during the commercial break. Mm-hmm. All right, I like Adam, but when you look at those top picks outside of Jaden Daniels, there are some question marks, right? Ben mm-hmm. Sinnott
yep.
hasn't
second
produced
rounder.
To the expectations, and this is a guy who some people were very happy that they were able to get him because of what he did in college, right? He was an All-American. He was the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year,
who
I believe.
Who are we talking about?
I'm talking about...
You're talking about Newton?
I'm talking about Johnny Newton.
Yeah, he's just been disappointed.
Yeah, because remember he said he couldn't believe he was still available.
But the reason he slipped was he had some injury issues.
He had a foot injury issue that other teams were worried about.
Yeah, but they resolved
but even
it.
When
he
was,
had surgery on both feet.
But even when he was healthy, he didn't really take that next step.
He never
dominant.
He would flash at times.
Yeah, flashes.
But he was never consistent. Yeah. You always hope.
So what's it say about Adam Peters and his drafts? It's probably mid right now.
That's what I said. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're going to be fair, you know, you got contributors.
Contributors.
We were talking about it like McCaffrey.
But let's hope Sonny turns into a star.
Fourth round pick in Jalen Lane last year, contributor, special teams contributors. But and Jaden, of course, is a home run, but it's number two pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know. If you got a bust column and you have a hit column, it's probably about 50-50 right now.
I don't think it's fair to not really give him full credit for the Jaden because he was the 2 pick. Because guys bust on high picks all the time. So I think he gets full credit even though it was the high pick.
Yeah,
If you want to give him bust for the others or whatever, that's fine.
Could have had Drake May.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that Drake May is better than Jaden. I'm not convinced Drake May's
going to the
Hall of Fame.
He wasn't in year one. He was in year two.
Yeah.
But Jaden's going to the Hall of Fame, but Drake May's not.
I don't know yet. I didn't say he's not. I said I'm not convinced.
You haven't made that declaration for Drake May yet? I'm kind of surprised.
No. It's almost impossible to go to the Hall of Fame.
Needs to build more.
You
got to
play like 15 years and put up crazy numbers.
It's really disappointing. This was a make or break year for Johnny.
It was a big one.
They let Jonathan Allen go because of him a year ago.
And that's right. That's right.
Eric, you can't shrug to that. That's what happened.
Johnny Newton has been a disappointment prior to the injury.
Well, as soon as they drafted him, a lot of people were excited because he was a top 15 talent, but the huge red flag was that this guy can't stay healthy.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what kind of drama you're trying to... Are you trying to say that Adam Peters is not good at this job or that Johnny Newton's not good at his job?
I'm just saying there's... Well, both. I mean, I don't want to say Adam Peters isn't good at his job. He's had
I'm just telling
of Jaden
you
Daniels, these guys are missing.
I'm
Trey
just
Amos
telling you as a Skins
injured,
fan, like, I'm a Skins fan, you're not. Skins fans were not expecting much from Johnny.
And that's not
at this
true.
Point.
That's
at this
not
point,
true.
It's
at
over.
Point, well, at this point, maybe,
yeah.
But that doesn't.
No, but early
this
on,
is when you
sure.
can revisit a draft.
Okay,
3 years later.
But Commanders fans should expect a lot out of Johnny Newton when he's drafted in the second round.
Yeah,
that's the takeaway. Like when you pick a player in the second round, like,
he should be a starter in his third year.
I agree. He disappointed.
Absolutely.
And I don't care. You want to give him an F for it? I don't care. I'm moving on from him. I think we have enough depth to handle it. That's where I'm at. If you want to say Adam Peters can't draft
and
Johnny Newton's a bust.
Yeah.
I'm not going
to
argue.
I don't know if they have enough depth.
I'm just saying
if those guys are a tick
it.
Below,
he's not that good. So
yeah,
you definitely lose him.
But on the depth chart, he was above all those other guys you're talking about.
He wasn't above Payne, wasn't above Kinlaw, wasn't above Settle.
No, not of those guys.
I know they've been talking up before the injury, they've been talking up Shai Tuttle.
He was on second team and he was going to be rotating.
I don't know, for some reason
You don't it's not a factor to you.
For some reason I don't think it's a big factor, but I think Drab wants it to be a big factor.
Because he knows you're defensive about it.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know he was defensive about it. I think it's a good talking point. And just because you're a Skins fan, that doesn't mean that other people can't have input on
it. No, of course
you're
doing
the Ryan
input.
Clark I played, you didn't bet.
No, I'm not. I'm just telling you, as a Skins fan, I don't think we were super expecting much. Like, we've already kind of given up on Johnny Newton.
Hold on, given up on him before the injury happened?
Yes, kind of.
Well, then that's a huge miss.
Yeah. Yeah, who cares? Yeah, it's a mess. Yeah, that's right.
Who cares? Who cares?
I'm not here to defend anybody. So I don't care. You can give him an A or an F. My job is not to defend anybody's draft record. I could care less. I'm dealing in reality. Johnny Newton's has been a disappointment. That's a reality.
But he could have taken
that's
next
all I care about.
This year.
It's a reality.
But it's also a problem. If a second round pick isn't hitting in year three,
it's a problem, but I think we'll be able to withstand. Here's the bottom line. We're going to miss the playoffs this year, not because of Johnny Newton. Not because of not having Johnny Newton.
Okay, but like you're talking about all this depth they have behind him.
I think we have pretty good depth.
I might know him if you walk through that door, but like you're relying on Shai Tuttle?
You don't think it's a problem if Adam Peters is having a track record of taking second round
players.
Taking second round players that have an injury history, a la Newton, a la Trey Amos.
Well, that's a different issue. If you want to do this, turn this into a referendum on Adam Peters, that's fine. I'm looking at... What I care about is, are we going to win games this year?
Now, to be
fair. And losing Johnny Newton, I don't think is going
to
hurt us that much in winning games. That's what I'm looking at.
To be fair.
You guys want to look at it and let's evaluate Adam Peters? Well, that's a different discussion.
To be fair, the injury that he's got now wasn't the injury.
Of course. That's nothing
that he had in college.
Yeah.
Was he injury prone in college? Yeah, but it wasn't his
pack. Not what he has now.
Yeah.
No. But he's been a disappointment.
I would agree with you that's not a huge factor, but I think it's a factor.
I mean, I'll be honest. I'm not that confident in Shai Tuttle, Jeffrey Mba, Byron Coward. I know he's flashed in camp, and Maurice Hurst. I feel like that depth
those are
is,
backups.
Yeah, but those are guys who are going to have to now elevate with Johnny Newton sideline.
Okay. So you think it's a big deal?
It's at least a medium deal. At right, a minimum, it's a medium deal.
I'll put that up as our junkies poll of
it's
the day.
It's not a small deal.
That's brought to you by Surfside Iced Tea and Vodka.
It's relatively small.
Or Surfside Lemonade and Vodka.
It's not.
This summer, grab a Surfside. You go to canned cocktail made with real vodka, only 100 calories and zero bubbles. It's not a seltzer. It's Surfside. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly. There'll be three choices on the poll. Big deal, medium deal, little deal.
Definitely voting a medium deal.
I need my phone back to put up the poll, but it'll get up there eventually.
But then you start. You factor in Tunsil and Amos.
Yeah.
And now.
Well, that is, and now it, that is a big issue.
Yeah. And then Newton, Allegretti.
The sheer number
okay,
of
so
injuries?
You got four guys right there that are pretty big names that were certainly all either starters or going to play.
Well, they got Owe. And the thing Owe's that worries got, me, this is the
he's
same
got a calf,
thing,
right?
The calf. Yeah. The problem with the calf is that could turn into an Achilles.
And Settle That's has not that good. Too. Settle's dealing got that. The same thing.
Yeah.
And then Chaisson hurt his knee.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just starting to add up.
Mm-hmm. So second round picks, if you go back to Peter's first draft here, Johnny Newton, Ben Sinnott.
Yep.
Third round that year, Brandon Coleman, Luke McCaffrey.
Yeah.
All right.
Coleman's going to start.
Contributors.
McCaffrey
starter,
could be the starting number three receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Then the rest of that draft was Jordan McGee, Dominique Campton, Gene Batiste.
McGee has shown signs.
McGee's at least a role depth player.
He's going to make he's linebacker. On the roster.
Yep.
Last year was Connerly, first round
starter.
Amos, starter, second round. Jalen Lane, fourth round. Medrano, and then kind of the big hit was Bill in the seventh round, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt.
It's kind of early. I mean, he's only 3 years in.
Yeah.
It's kind of early to say he's not a good draft GM.
Well, he's definitely had a bunch of hits.
I don't think that's fair.
He's had a bunch of hits. Yeah. Ben Sinnott and Johnny Newton, that first draft in the second round, are
that
disappointments.
That doesn't look great. All right. And he's got Sonny this year. Hopefully Sonny is, an instant star. Right? So
that's the hope.
Yep. Hope he's
I mean,
he's
a lot
leader,
of the guys
one of the
you,
leaders of the defense.
A lot of the guys that you mentioned that he drafted are starters.
They're contributors. I mean, McCaffrey, Jalen Lane, they're at least special teams contributors. And in and catch the ball a few times.
Lane was a fourth-round pick. What did you expect? I mean, the fact that he's one of the best or better punt returners in the league. Showed it last year.
And your starting running back was a seventh-round pick.
Yep.
Yeah, that's huge
value. I think he has more pluses in the draft than minuses.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Johnny Newton is trending to be a minus.
800-636-1067 is the loss of Johnny Newton from the defensive line of the Commanders. Small deal, medium deal, big deal. 800-636-1067.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll take more of your calls on that next on an Open Line Thursday.
106.7 The Fan. Mystics play tonight. If you're watching us on Monumental Sports Network, you can watch Sticks this evening.
Right here.
Right here. I think we air those. I think they air on 980 also, if you want to listen to it.
Okay.
You are listening to B. Mitch and Finley. And earlier, I got to catch up with Commanders' second-year tackle, Josh Connerly. I can't say enough what it means to me that a rookie O-lineman played every snap.
Yeah. That's a lot. They get to like the 8th, 9th game of the season, and they looking and they got all those games left in front of them. And he was able to handle it, and he got better down the stretch. So,
here is my conversation with Josh Connerly. Appreciate getting to talk to Commanders tackle Josh Connerly Jr. How's camp going, dude?
It's been solid. It's been lots of ups and downs, but a lot more good than bad. And we're all just gelling at the right time, I feel like, and we're just ready to get out there and put it on film for real. So.
How different do you feel in year two than maybe this time last year?
I feel a lot more confident, comfortable where I'm at. Obviously, camp last year, those were my first time getting real reps at right tackle, live reps, I should say. And now, obviously, I've been through a whole season and a whole off season, and I feel like I'm start definitely settling in and a lot more comfortable than where I was, for sure.
Pretty well documented. You and Laramie became close. I'd say friends, teammates, all of it. Spent a lot of time together in the offseason. Just forget the football for a moment. How difficult was that injury for you just as a person?
Yeah, I was just sick for him. watching how hard he worked this offseason to make sure that he was, that his body was always right. And really, I'm going to say, like I said, just watching how much work that he puts in to himself and how well he takes care of himself, it definitely hurt me. But, you know, like, he'll be all right. He's like, you know, I'm a grown man, you know. I wasn't like depressed by it or anything. Sure. I felt bad for him, like I said, because, you know, spent months working, and then like we get what, 10 days,
it's crazy.
And then, you know, something like that happens. But, you know, it is what it is. That's ball, and he'll be back. He'll be stronger.
The craziest part, and, you know, we're on the outside looking in, right? But it was Friday morning was Steph Diggs' first practice.
Right.
And you could feel the excitement that a veteran of his caliber brings to the field, right? And then Saturday evening is the Tunsil news. Like, when you talk about the highs and the lows, like, that was 48 hours, right? You know? What was that like for you guys to all process?
Yeah, I mean, to have, like, our whole offense out there for, what, maybe, like, one practice?
Yeah.
Practice and a half. Like you said, the vibes were really high, and then losing LT, like, the vibes were, they dwindled a little bit, but like we know what we have in our room, and
right.
It's really just next man up mentality, and at the end of the day, we have a job to go do out there, you know what I'm saying? And can't sit there and dwell on it, you know, like, losing LT, that's a huge part of our offense and our whole organization, to be honest. But you know, like I said, it's next man up, and we got to go out there and just produce. So
it's interesting too, and I don't know if you agree with me here. Obviously, it's unfortunate. You never want it to happen,
right?
But to happen really early on almost gives you guys like a full month with BC at left tackle,
right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, maybe blessing in disguise is the wrong term, but at least you get plenty of time to kind of build with Brandon.
Yeah.
And I thought BC's looked quite good.
Yeah.
In the time since.
Yeah, I mean, he's played left tackle before.
Right.
He stepped in for LT last year whenever he went down.
Yeah.
Played in the NFC Championship at left tackle. I mean, you know that, like, he has a lot of experience, and he's a damn good tackle, you know. So, like, great guard, good tackle. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, at the end of the day, he's a ball player.
Right.
You know, so gotta respect that.
DQ said when the injury happened, there was not a conversation about moving you to the left side. Obviously, you played on the left side
right.
in college. Are you like, you're a right tackle now. Do you feel quite comfortable in that?
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I do. Like you said, there was no conversation to me. I don't think they would want to necessarily throw off the progression that I made. To becoming a better.
And that's kind of what Quinn said.
Yeah, so I feel like that's more the reasoning. So,
how different is this offense for the offensive line?
I mean, I feel like with some of the different schemes that we run, just letting athletes be athletes, and just getting running, and I mean, we marry that up with lots of different things, and with us in pass pro as well. So. I think that's the best part about it.
How do you feel like you guys are catching on with the offense?
I mean, I feel like we've been rolling. I mean, even in joint practice, like, there, like, you know, there were some things that we needed to clean up, but overall, being able to go against somebody else and just see some things come to fruition was really nice to see. So,
how good is it to see Nick back and Bates back?
It's awesome. Well, I'd say seeing them in pads, I mean, in their helmets and stuff again, out there with us, it's awesome. You know, just getting the band back together. You know.
Where do you think Jaden is in the new offense?
Oh, I think he's came a long way from where we were in the spring.
He looks excellent.
I'm going to say, yeah. No, he communicates with a lot of confidence, makes checks and calls a lot more confident. And, I mean, when we step up to the line, like, we know he's ready. You know what I'm saying? So we just got to make sure we match that.
I bet, man. I think he has looked so dialed throughout this camp. And Quinn mentioned this. I was – impressed Friday night, no real procedural stuff.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, like, even just watching practice every day, it doesn't seem like you guys have to go back to the huddle for a play call or like, you know, just like the little things like illegal shifts or motions and stuff. Do you feel like as a team you guys have locked it all in?
Yeah, I wouldn't say locked all the way in, you
sure.
know.
You gotta...
Obviously nothing's perfect. And I mean, we've had a few where we've had to, like, you know, get personnel right or, you know, get the snap count right. But that's one every so many plays, you know what I'm saying? So I definitely agree with you, and I think we've been pretty clean on that part.
How different is going up against this defense? Because it's aggressive and guys are coming from everywhere.
Yeah. Third down's a little more difficult for sure. But it's nice because I feel like with their scheme, you see that every so many weeks. So when you do see a true 3-4 rolling five big guys out there, you know what I'm saying? Like once that time comes, if there's teams that play multiple fronts, you know, we're already we know what's coming. And I mean they play a lot, they play even fronts, they play five down fronts, you know what I'm saying? So I mean for them to have the ability to do both, I feel like it only prepares us better for once we go against somebody else. So,
for sure.
Yeah.
Last question.
Yeah.
Do the Oregon Ducks win the national championship?
Absolutely. I wouldn't say their roster is better than our 23 roster, but I think they have it all.
I can't believe the quarterback stayed.
Oh yeah, I mean
that says something.
I'm gonna say that's just the guy he is, you know, and his maturity.
Didn't
level.
Somebody else come? Did another quarterback come?
Yeah, Dylan Raiola came from
Nebraska.
Yeah, and I mean for Nante to still stay, mentor him, get himself right, you know, it's just his maturity level that speaks the most to him, and he's a great dude, and they have probably like one or two of the best guy at each position on the field. So it's gonna be a great season.
I will say, knowing you a little bit and knowing Marcus and some other guys I've worked with, the players come out of that Oregon program like polished.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's something to it. Something in the water.
Pro level program, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
We just gonna continue that.
And everybody has fresh Nikes coming out.
Yeah. I'm gonna say we always keep the feet fresh. So.
Thank you for your time, man.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Josh Connerly.
He's a lot more confident.
Yeah, dude.
You can hear it.
What do you think constitutes a good season for him?
I mean, just keep growing from where he was last year. You know, I don't think he has to do nothing drastic. The thing about offensive linemen, they gotta be consistent. And if he can consistently block and take care of that front side, he's going to be fine. I look at him last year starting off, and he looked lost a little bit. But then you saw him start to grow. And then he hit a point around week 9, 10 where he had it. But he was a little weaker than some of those guys he's going against, grown men. He had a whole year to work out. He can be closer to them right now.
It's interesting with this Commanders offensive line. I kind of want to open the phones on this. 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. Coming into the season, I said, I believe you agree with me, but perhaps not. I thought the offensive line was their best group.
Yeah.
I thought it was the best position group on this roster because Tunsil can play at an all-pro level. I think Cosby, you could make a real argument, will be a Pro Bowler this year. The way Cosby's been playing so far, looks like he could be a Pro Bowl player. Obviously, the Biadasz exit had a lot of people up in arms. I feel awful that he hurt his knee. Looks like he might be out for the year out with the Chargers. Allegretti steps in. Then Allegretti has the injury. Then you lose Tunsil. And all of a sudden, I'm just curious where everybody is talking O-line. Like, you're now looking from left to right, Coleman, Paul, Allegretti, Cosme, Connerly. How comfortable are you? How confident are you with that group?
I'm confident with it because I saw what Brandon Coleman is capable of, and I think he can get back to that. And listen, last year might be the best thing that ever happened to him in his career, where he saw you can be on cloud nine 1 year, and the next year could be gone. So he worked out with Connerly and Tunsil this offseason. Now he gets the opportunity to go and show what he learned. But the reason I think I feel more confident, I believe Blau coming from that offense that he has up there with Johnson and being to add some stuff to it, and also sitting back and watching where they weren't helping the tackles. Just that right there, him having tight ends and running backs that are actually cool, okay with pass blocking, helping out a tackle, that could change it up right there.
In a big way.
You know, listen, man, we had Lachey, we had Grimm, you know, all those type of people out there. And guess what? We chipped and helped them. I don't know why people think just because you are an exceptional offensive tackle, you got to do it all by yourself. Every once in a while, you need a little help. And if those D linemen begin to know that I got running backs and tight ends that are going to hit me in my chest, in my ribs, they start coming a little slower. And I forgot who it was. I don't know if it was Sam or somebody else. Sam, you start dancing around and slowing down a little bit, the ball should be gone, right?
Yeah.
So it helps out the blocking as well.
800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. We're now a couple weeks into camp. We know Tunsil's out. We know Coleman's in. Allegretti's back. How comfortable are you with this group? Because that's the engine, dude. Like, Jaden Daniels is the rise and fall of the season, but the big fellas in front of him got a block. And I think you could still like this O-line, even knowing – I thought Coleman's looked good.
Yeah.
And
it's like Sam said, he moved from tackle to guard, and it was okay for him. Some guys it doesn't work like that for. Some guys are better outside with that space. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because, like, inside, it's a lot of stuff going on in there. And some guys not very comfortable with that. So just like being a catcher. Most guys can't catch because when that bat swung, they either close their eyes or they move. You see what I'm saying? Other guys sit there and don't worry about that bat at all. I could play all the stuff on baseball. I couldn't bear catch. Couldn't
right.
play catcher.
Right.
Because that bat, bro, I'm too just close. Always like, bro.
Too close.
Yeah,
too
man.
Close, man.
And that ball sometimes to come off of that thing, you can't even see. Even the best pitchers. I mean, the best catchers get hit. It could be like that for him inside. Outside, he feels more comfortable.
B. Mitchell Finley taking your calls. Dan Quinn did talk about Brandon Coleman this morning. Here is the Commander's head coach on his new left tackle.
They definitely worked together, even like through the offseason of some time where Brandon was working guard and tackle when he did do some of that. That'd be a better one for him on like the specifics of it. Brandon's got really good feet. We can always feel that part of him. So I think he's definitely comfortable at tackle. Like, it seems natural in a lot of ways for him to be in that space. But I don't know if I feel a different spot, you know, in between, but that'd be a good one for him. But they've definitely spent a good bit of time together, and I would imagine if you spend much time with Laramie, there's going to be some tips to learn and some insight to gain, offense or defense.
I think Coleman's growth, how much of it do you think, like Cosby today, when he sat down with us, if you missed any of our interview with Sam Cosby, make sure you check it out. He was kind, sat down with us for damn near a half hour. We just chopped it up, talk ball, talk life. But Cosby talked about being a pro, five years in, the supplements he takes, getting to sleep, knowing how to take care of his body. How much of that do you think maybe Brandon Coleman has realized now going into year three?
Well, I hope a lot. You know, I can't put an exact number on what he's done, but he comes into the league, and 1 year, everything works out for him. He's a starting left tackle in the NFL. The next year, they bring another guy in who's a perennial All-Pro, move him inside, and all of a sudden, he's on the sideline watching. If he didn't learn from whatever he did the first year that made him good, that he might have gotten away from, and then having a wherewithal to look, Connelly's about to go work out with Tunsil. Hey, can I tag along? And then as soon as he gets back, he's back in that position again because Tunsil goes down. I guarantee you stuff they've talked about. They probably watched some film. He had some little tidbit here or there that told him, listen, man, I better start doing this. And I'll tell him, like, he looks at Sam. If he hadn't asked Sam, what the hell he's done too? He's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, it's every little thing, man. When you get to this league, I know everybody want to do it themselves. The best, learn something from somebody else. It makes it easier for you, and you can get where you want to go a lot quicker.
What was your kind of – I know you said how much Ernest Biner helped
yeah.
you. But, like, did something change for you after year one, after year two? Like, was there ever a year where you're like, I have to do this now? Like, was there ever a moment like
year
that?
Year one, it's like I was learning from Ernest before I made the team. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then making the team and getting to midway through the season where – a little tired, more tired. And he was like, look, man, you got to get more rest. You got to do this. You got to do that. Started doing those things. That next year, you know, that first year, I went home. I told you, I left here about 209 pounds, came back 230. That next year, I didn't go home. okay? I hung around more. I worked out. I didn't allow my body to get out of shape. So I had to try to eat right and do the different things. But I got heavy into what I felt got me ready for football. You know what I'm saying? Some guys ran all day. I ran, but I was more of a lifter because I was going to be a thumper.
Right.
You know, and I got into that and wanted to get into the best shape I can. But then Ernest was like, yo, man, when you watch film, and I told him I watched some film, he said, how long it took you? I told him like 15, 20 minutes. He's like, bro, that's watching TV. They ain't watching no film. So I sat down with him, and he would break down this stuff. And, man, I'm talking about he's there 2 hours, and it's like first two drives. And that changed because he would show me stuff, and I'm like, oh, damn. And then I learned how to watch film and how to take that, what I learned from the film, to the field and not give away so many tendencies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's interesting, man. You are listening to B. Mitch and Finley. Grant and Danny coming your way at 2 p.m. Nobody go anywhere. We're taking your calls, 800-636-1067. Should I squeeze my man Paul in real quick? Paul, how you feel about this offensive line, dude?
Hey, what's up, man? I think that for the most part, I think people are sleeping on Brandon Coleman. And I believe that he was picked where he was picked for a reason. And just like B. Mitch always say, sometimes the person behind the starter just needs an opportunity. And once they get that opportunity, then you'll see what they made of. B. Mitch, we didn't know what type of running back B. Mitch was until he got that opportunity. And we saw what he could do in that San Francisco 49ers playoff game. Mm. So, I mean, you know, sometimes in sports and in life in particular, we just need to have that opportunity. And I think Brandon Coleman is going to surprise some people. And I think that, you know, the rest of the line is pretty much solidified. With Connolly on the right side, with Cosme, that looked like a strong all-pro right side. And then Al Grady is going to come in. And I just think that Chris Paul is going to also show you what he made of. So, you know, and then like B-Mitch said, I like that point that B-Mitch said with the tight end. Sometimes, you know, when you're doing, two tight ends, three tight ends, that helps with the running game. And then at the same time, it's kind of...
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
And that defensive line down to a point where on the fourth quarter, they're not going to be able to put that rush out there like they used to because their legs going to be tired. Last year, one of the reasons, one of the things I had with Cliff Kingsbury was the fact that he just passed too much out of, you know,
Linemen like running the ball. They like going downhill. Appreciate the call, man. Good call. Phone lines are open, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. We're kind of established now in the life post-Laramie Tunsil injury. How you feel about the Commanders' O-line?
Danny, I'm going to say something that is oxymoronic and antithetical for
you. Okay.
I actually had to text people about this today. Toby was one of the people that got this text because he's been to this place with me. So when practice ends, prior to us doing the show from out here, oftentimes I just want to get out of here and get into the air conditioning. And so we'll go somewhere at One Loudon or whatever, post up, grab lunch, come back. I went over to Matchbox today, and I got a salad, which is a terrible thing.
Yeah,
it's just a punishment.
Every salad stinks. We all know that.
Yeah. But, you know, let's eat a salad. Let's be healthy for a meal. And I got a pear salad with, like, vinaigrette of some type with blackened chicken. And it was excellent.
What?
Excellent. Like, I'm eating it going, this is tasty. Now, you finish your salad and you're hungry and you're ready for the meal.
Right.
You're like, when do I get to eat lunch now? But still, when's the last time you've eaten a salad and you're like, that was actually good? I felt that way.
That's... okay, that's a lot to process. The answer is, I'm not just doing a bit, like a tough guy bit. Ooh, never. I have never gone great salad, unless it's like one of the good salads, like a chicken or, you know, egg salad or like a thing that's a meal. But like a salad with stupid lettuce, and it's only, oh, this is tolerable. That's as good as it's ever been for me. Is I go, okay, I don't hate this. I don't want to just jump off a bridge or something. I'll eat this. This is fine. But then, as you said, where's my meal? That's amazing that it was good.
Dude, it was good. Like, I would get it again in a day or two. The bartender asked me, she's like, how was it? Or like, basically came over and was like, everything good? And I'm like, this is actually fantastic. She's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, it's surprising, right? It's a salad.
It's a salad. It's limited by its salad-iness.
But don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it was better than a bacon cheeseburger or something. As far as salads go, though, I'm giving it a 65 grade. Like, I enjoyed myself. I would have enjoyed myself more with cheese fries.
Well, right.
Or buffalo wings, extra crispy. But as far as salads go, it was a win.
So on the salad scale, high, but on the real food scale, still in its appropriate place, where the greatest a salad can be could never be as good as a mediocre sandwich.
So on a salad scale, 20-80 salad scale?
Yeah.
This was an 80 salad. On a food scale, for my lunch, I'm giving it probably like a 55-60.
Wow. Still,
yeah, it was an above-average lunch.
That's unbelievable.
Taste.
How about it?
Quality. Freshness. All those things. It was good.
Good for Matchbox, putting together a salad like that. Are you sure there wasn't like pizza shavings in it?
Maybe.
You know what I mean? It's like a secret ingredient.
I was inspired to because I was walking in and I saw Will Montgomery was having a nice lunch with his mother. Just randomly, former Washington Redskins legend.
Dude, and, our guy.
Yeah, friend of the program. And he had just gotten a salad dropped off at his table, and it was like steak with his salad. I probably should have done that. But I was like, damn, that doesn't look bad, actually. That kind of looks good. And so I sat down and I did that, and I was like, let's go. So it was a win. Next time you and I get together at Matchbox, we'll be salad pals.
I don't know, man. I don't know. We can talk about a bite of a salad. I'm at Matchbox. I can't order a salad there.
So many good things you have
There's
to turn down.
So many good things.
It's like being at the beach and not being allowed to get out of your chair or, you know, stand up or play any games or, you know, do anything. You just have to be there, but you can't listen to the ocean.
You just turn away from the ocean.
Right. Don't look at the ocean. You can't go near the water. And also, all you get to do is get sunburned.
Ugh.
Antonio Williams was going to be potentially wide receiver two behind Terry McLaurin as the new piece added in the draft from Clemson. With the addition of Stephon Diggs, I think he's kind of become a little bit of the forgotten man. He got to make his debut in a game. He actually played in the preseason, which was nice. They got all the rookies in against the Miami Dolphins, and he made his first catch. Talk to him about that first game action against Miami today after practice.
Feel good to get out there, get your feet wet, be in front of the crowd. First time seeing the stadium, so it was a lot of experiences to take into one, but I think I learned a lot from that game just in terms of my routine and when I need to arrive and what I need to do to be ready.
We don't think about that much. I'm glad you mentioned that because I'm thinking about all the football stuff. How much of the preseason game for you was like that? Like, okay, here's the locker room, here's when I want to get here, that kind of stuff.
Besides like actually playing and getting in front of the fans, I think that was the biggest thing for me. Like, you know, it's different from college. You know, you don't have a mandatory bus you got to be on. You're staying in a team hotel, but you get a drive to the game. So it's a lot different. And, you know, first experience of mine like that. So it was big for me.
What's your take on like joint practice that you had against Miami? It seems to me like that's a game level intensity. And then the game itself, like, is there a difference between padded practice layered up to a joint practice? Is there another layer up to a game? Like, how do you view that?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely a difference. First, like when you're practicing against your own teammates, a lot different. You want to be more safe and cautious. But then when you see a different jersey and a guy you don't know, even in joint practice, it's a little bit different. Like you don't really have that cautiousness. You're just going out there and playing and having a little more aggressiveness. And I would say it's pretty similar to a game, except you're not tackling in the practice.
Antonio Williams on Grant and Danny. I love watching you run routes out here and just route people up with your footwork. What's your favorite route to run? Or like what, as a route running receiver, is your favorite thing to do, I guess?
Well, my favorite route to run doesn't really involve too much cutting. It's just a fade or a slot fade, wherever I'm at, just, you know, just one-on-one, go make a play, and those are the explosive ones.
I mean, when you're running a fade, I think the average fan thinks it's like run the same way every time. Are you setting someone up with footwork differently each time, or like that bait step is different, or is your fade kind of look the same if you watched it on tape?
You definitely want to, you know, make different things look the same. Same things look different. So, I mean, you got to know who you're going against and what type of technique they're using. They like to skate off the snap, and or if they're like heavy press and want to jam you, you got to know to get off quicker and use your hands more. So it really, it all depends on who you're going against. But obviously, as a receiver, we dictate how the snap goes, how the play is going to go. They're going off us, so we're always in control, and I like filling it up.
I know this is all you've known, but I love how tight this receiver room is. Today, there was a deep ball that Burks laid out for. Like, everyone ran down the sideline just to dap him up, even though he couldn't get to it. It wasn't his fault. I'm just curious, like, what your thought is on that. I know you haven't been in another receiver room in the league, but does that surprise you at all? Because you guys are all competing for the same jobs.
I mean, I think that's what makes each other, makes all of us great, or what's going to make us great, is just competing. I think that's the name of the game, and it's only one ball to go around, and everybody wants that one ball, but you got to earn it, you got to work for it, and I mean, you're going to be happy for your teammate when he gets it, too. It's no animosity towards each other. And, you know, I'm learning from all those guys. So, I mean, I think all the rooms I've been in have been tight like that, but even in college, too. So, you know, I'm good to – looking forward to keep going with these guys.
Last thing before I let you go, we like to introduce our listeners to players off the field. What are your favorite things to do when you're not playing football? Are you a gamer, TV binger? What do you do?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, I just got done watching Game of Thrones. So,
like the OG Game of Thrones?
Yeah, OG. My mom watched it a long time ago. I just finished it. She said I need to watch House of Dragon next. But I binge, I play the game, I golf, I fish. Man of many talents.
It sounds like it. You were a Game of Thrones fan? Were you in? Did you like it?
I loved it. I finished it in like 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
And we started camp like in the middle of it, so it slowed me down. I would have finished it earlier.
You would have cranked it out in like a week.
Yeah.
I think you'll like House of the Dragon then too.
Yeah.
It's up the same alley.
I've heard.
I appreciate you.
Appreciate you, man.
So we got a Game of Thrones guy in on the mix, Danny.
Oh, I love that so much. Do you ever think of this? Or I was thinking of this as soon as he said that. I was like, how did he not see it? Oh, because he was 11 years old when it came out.
So I was thinking the same thing, actually. It's like, man, you missed that the first time around? And then he said, my mom watched it years ago. And I think, because to me it's weird your mom would recommend Game of Thrones a little bit, but I think what happened was he was a child.
Yes.
His mom was a grown-up.
Yeah.
She was watching a really good TV show. And then him and his mom are talking about, like, good shows, and she's like, you know, it was one of my favorite shows was Game of Thrones. Or you remember when you were a kid not allowed to watch it and your mom watched it. And you check it out.
Because it's for grown-ups. I mean, there's some nudity in there. There's naked people in that show, Grant.
Not in Game of Thrones.
Oh, in Game of Thrones.
There's nudity in Game of Thrones?
There's nudity. There's nudity. There's lady nudity. There's all sorts of nudity. There's a lot of people without their clothes on all the time. And there's battles.
I don't remember Game of Thrones having nudity.
Yeah. It's a feature, not a bug. It's
sex
one of those
stuff?
Things. Sex stuff. Adults.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
Honestly.
With each other all the time.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That changes everything for me.
Doesn't it? Like, you're like, oh, but then that's the other part I thought of was like, yeah, my mom recommended it. Man, I don't know. I don't think we're watching in the same room.
I don't think they're watching it together.
No, you know, I don't think so either.
He's at the hotel. He's getting ready for practice the next day. I think it's more of a, what are your favorite shows? What should I binge? You know, you crowdsource a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we got another Game of Thrones guy on the show, so that's good. And then I thought you would like that I told him to watch House of the Dragon. I got into
that.
The first of the couple, but I haven't followed through or watched the most recent one. They take, like, 3 years off between them, so that's their problem, not mine. But I did like the first House of the Dragon season.
It's really good. And they did the thing that the original Game of Thrones did. I know this is you're going to stop listening and you're going to punt and not care. But they did the thing the original Game of Thrones did where people think of it as this huge epic show. And it wasn't for the first couple seasons. It was like people in a room talking bleep to each other, drinking wine, you know, with like beautiful settings and stuff. And then they would kind of use 90% of the budget on a huge sequence in like the 9th episode out of 10 over the course of a season. Right. That's kind of how House of the Dragon started, like small. Let's learn the characters first. Let's figure out the good and the bad, who we hate, who we don't, make them complicated. And, of course, there's dragons rolling around, so they had a bigger budget. But still, and then they made it epic, right, by the time you get to this season. Really good job. They built it. It's really good.
I want to look at the season he could have here for a second. Because one of the side effects to Diggs' arrival is that you're going to get less Antonio Williams. And the opportunities and the production's going to go down. And that is a worthwhile bug, so to speak. You know what I mean? That is an okay side effect for me because the offense is so much better. And I said this last week at one point, but being out here at every practice, like I've been throughout camp, Stephon Diggs is incredible as a route runner, as a zone beater, as a guy that just can feel his way through a defense and finding holes. He is – Quinn actually pointed this out today, and it's so true. Every ball targeted for him has been caught. And I don't remember the exact numbers. You'd have to look them up on Pro Football Reference or something. But if you look up last year, targets and catches for Stephon Diggs, it is running back-esque, Danny.
Yeah.
It's like – I'm making it up, but it's like – 85 catches on 93 targets or something crazy. And the assumption is mostly that it's line of scrimmage, backfield, you know, two-yard drag routes or whatever. There's a lot of that for sure. ADOT's low. It's also, he gets wide ass open. We were just talking about nakedness in Game of Thrones and nudity. He gets naked open all the time on the practice field, every single day. And I bring this up to say that he's going to make this offense better. Bringing him in was absolutely a good decision. I'm happy they did it. But it does change the math on Williams. And it needs to change what we consider to be success. I now view his production as long as when he's out there, he looks like he belongs. He catches everything thrown to him. He doesn't drop stuff. He's not getting false starts on number 14 because he moved early.
Yep.
You know, the Ryan Grant lineup on the wrong side. We're burning a timeout because he's not on the right side where you just feel like, this dude doesn't quite have it. If he's out there and he makes the occasional play and when he's targeted, he moves the chains, I don't really care what the end-of-season totals are because they put a massive obstacle ahead of him.
Yeah, instead of I'm counting on you for huge production, quite frankly, as the number two receiver, and I hope he can do it, it's a getting where you fit in because there are two guys that need to eat first. I'd much rather be there. And again, to your point, if this was a pure rebuild situation, not that this really happens in football, but bear with me, if you didn't have Jaden Daniels and this was another Case Keenum, Carson Wentz, Taylor Heineke, Sam Howell type season, I'd go, yeah, I'm not that interested in Diggs for 1 year, honestly. Like, I'd rather have him than not, I suppose, but make sure Williams gets his, you know, 60 snaps a game, and I want him around 75, 80 targets, and we'll see what happens, see what we got, right? Now I'm not as concerned about that. Again, this is a team that's designed to win right now. Whether you think they're designed well or not, I think is a great debate, and we'll have that a million times as the season progresses. But to me, the priority is what's the best thing for Jaden Daniels? And it's not hoping that a third-round rookie, who I like, turns into a bona fide number two, or is he just a slot guy, et cetera. It's to have more weaponry, especially one as good as Stephon Diggs, who, to me, again, I'm still surprised he was available at the little cost that they had to pay for him.
Who gets cut at wide receiver? Today, for what it's worth, they ran a drill where they were doing kick coverage. And I always, it's funny, you see people like put their notebooks away, or fans especially will like care a little bit less about the special teams period.
Uh-huh.
It's a down part of practice where nothing exciting's happening. It's the biggest tell, it's the most interesting roster part of this whole thing because you see who's currently on the first unit for coverage. Luke McCaffrey was out there. Treylon Burks was out there, as an example. So was Kane Medrano and Ale Kaho, which makes you think as of right now, assuming they're not out there because of an injury, like I guess theoretically Jordan McGee would be out there and maybe Medrano wouldn't be. But those guys, as of this day, right now, are on the 53-man roster. That's what that tells you. But I think McCaffrey is squarely on the bubble. We've talked a lot about receiver because I think it's the most compelling position in camp, and so many guys are having good camps. Like, the guy to me that was having the least interesting, least impressive camp was Jalen Lane, who might have helped himself the most against the Dolphins, and then he had an awesome practice yesterday. It was very noticeable. So McLaurin, Diggs, Williams, Lane, because of his punt returning, probably in. If they keep two more, McCaffrey, Burks, Diami, Van Jefferson, who's in? I mean, which receiver gets cut here?
It's so hard to interpret, and this is another reason why it's a negative to a degree, just as a quick corollary, when it's nothing but the Hartman and Kalec Manis show, is you don't get great evals of some of these receivers. And we talked about that ad nauseum, but back to the point. So this is the question I asked after the game. I'm still asking because I don't know the answer. Is Luke McCaffrey's lack of involvement because they know what they got, or because he wasn't involved and is now pushed down the depth chart this past week? What will we learn this week? If he plays a bleep ton from like the second quarter, third quarter, and he's there with the baklava bomber, and he, you know, has a bunch of catches, is that a tell in a different direction? It's so hard to feel it.
Well, if he's on the field with like Nick Nash and Jaden Bradley in the fourth quarter of the game, he's in trouble. I mean, that's definite.
I would think so. So just doing this, I've run this a bunch of different times. They like De'Ami Brown more than I do. Like, to me, that would be the guy that I would say I'm not really that concerned about keeping, losing, whatever. But they
seem
to value.
Let me ask you this real quick before you go on. Mm-hmm. I'm not asking, do you care? Because I know how you feel.
Right.
Do you think they care, assuming I'm right about what I'm about to say, which mm-hmm. is just my own observation, that he probably has the closest relationship to Jaden Daniels of any receiver on
I
the
think
team?
They care, yes.
Should they care?
No.
I'm not a no on that, honestly. It's not because I'm trying to like placate or make him happy. I think the relationship between quarterback and wide receiver is really important to the production between quarterback and receiver. So I just don't think it's a net zero, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. But, you know, you can be great friends, but like I'm not saying this is the case, but if there are seven guys better than him, sorry. You know what I mean? Like guys that are buds get moved to practice squads or cut or traded kind of all the time. So, I mean, and that's where I view him, but I don't think they do. I think they like him more than I do, which is fine. You're allowed to have different evals. So the guy that I feel like is in trouble is McCaffrey. But again, this is their third-round pick from just a couple of years ago, and it wouldn't look real good, and I think they're not in the business of not looking real good in that regard. So every time I kind of do it, I go, okay, this is who I think, but then it's like, well, wait a minute, do I have to reverse course on that because of a totally different reason? This is, to me, the roster quandary, and I don't have a very good definitive answer or feel for it right now.
Are you keeping six or seven receivers?
Seven, including Lane, because I consider him more punt returner than I consider him receiver. I think that's how they'll sell
it. So then you're keeping Van Jefferson. If you're keeping seven and cutting McCaffrey, it means Burks is in, De'Ami is in, and Van Jefferson is in. Luke's the only one out.
I suppose, yeah, if it's that seven with Lane. Yeah, so that's Brown, Jefferson, Williams, Burks, Lane, Diggs, McLaurin. There's your seven.
So
you think it's Jefferson and McCaffrey gone then? If they do six?
No, I've got them. If they were to keep six, I would say yes. But I don't think that'll happen. I think they keep seven, and Luke's in. I think Van Jefferson, despite actually having a better camp than a few guys that would make the team, is out. Because if you look at it, they are going younger at a lot of positions. I think to get younger, it's an emphasis.
Uh-huh.
Think about like linebacker with a Caho, with a Medrano, those types of guys. Van Jefferson's 30, and I think that'll work against him here a little bit. A little bit of a known commodity. We know how they feel about wide receivers with ages that start with a three. Ask 2025 Adam Peters in training camp. You know what I mean? Ask Terry McLaurin about that. I would not want to cut Van Jefferson. And I now have seen enough from him in this camp that if I was like a GM of a team that has four receivers that I like, I would immediately sign that guy because he can play. And he's also played a lot of special teams the last few days at practice, by the way. But if they keep seven right now, I'm going to say Luke is in. Younger, more upside, kick returner, draft pick, and Van Jefferson, 30, signed off the waiver wire, is the guy that's out. If you guys have a thought on that, you can give us a shout. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 is how you hop in. G&D on the Fan.
I'm going to read this. It's going to get me in trouble. No, it won't get me in trouble.
Uh-oh.
From Angela, I was just scrolling through, some in-show correspondence. Angela writes, Kevin, it doesn't seem to bother you to use the team's past racist names so casually. Maybe consider how offensive it is to so many Native Americans the next time you use it. Angela's listening to the show today, and we've mentioned the name Redskins a lot because we've talked a lot about Redskins teams from the past. The question, by the way, with the phones open, what's the greatest Redskins, Washington football team, or Commanders team to never make the Super Bowl? This is off of the Aaron Schatz story on ESPN where he ranked the greatest teams in NFL history not to make the Super Bowl. The number one team, by the way, the 2023 Baltimore Ravens. No Redskins team, no Washington football team, no Commanders team is actually listed among the top 16. So I asked you guys, especially you old heads, give me the team that you think was the greatest team that didn't make the Super Bowl. For me, it's the 79 Redskins. They were 2.5 minutes away from being the one seed in the NFC playoffs, and an NFC playoff situation that wasn't great. It doesn't mean because their road or their path would have been an easier path to the Super Bowl had they gotten in, that that's the greatest Redskins team to not make the Super Bowl. But that team was playing so well. They were so together. They were so balanced. They had Joe Theismann playing at a super high level. They didn't have great receivers, but they had Riggo in the backfield. They had Joe Walton, who was, you know, a very good offensive coordinator. Jack Pardee, their head coach, was actually an excellent defensive mind. And they really got on a roll and ended up, you know, being 2.5 minutes away from being 11-5 and being the one seed. And that's my number one. Number two is the 74 team, which probably was George Allen's best offensive team during the years in which they were always great defensively. Unfortunately, they went to the Coliseum in the first round of the playoffs. Well, before that, they lost an absolute killer game on Thanksgiving Day to Clint Longley and his, you know, legendary exploits on Thanksgiving Day. If they had won that game, they would have won the division. They would have hosted playoff games instead of having to go to Los Angeles, where they lost on a very gusty day at the Los Angeles Coliseum, in which they played a game which was not typical for them that year. They turned it over 6 times and still had a chance late in the fourth quarter to win the game. So those would be the teams that I'd put at the top of the list. I want yours at 301-230-0980. So Angela, look, just to answer your email, I have over the years considered how offensive using the Redskins name is to Native Americans, and I've concluded time and time again that it isn't very offensive to the majority of Native Americans, which is why I continue to feel comfortable using it, and certainly am going to use it when referencing the team's history, because that's who they were. The 1979 team that I think is the greatest Redskins team to not go to the Super Bowl, they were the Washington Redskins. I think you should do more research on how offensive it is. And if you're going to give me the answer, you know, if it's offensive to one Native American, that's enough for me. I'm just not going to have a conversation with you, because you can find 10-15% in any conversation of a group of people that will be offended by something. All right, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. The best all-time Redskins, Washington football, or Commanders team not to make the Super Bowl. Let's go with, well, Robert in Annapolis has been on hold the longest. He's not a Redskins fan. He's not a Washington fan. But go ahead, Robert. Weigh in.
Good morning. Well, this old head is going to mention the 1984, Redskins. You know, I thought they had a good shot to be the first NFC team to go to 3 straight Super Bowls. They won their division, and they did something that no other Redskins team did. They lost a home game at RFK. I think they had about 11 or 12 home games at RFK in the playoffs, and that was the only one that was lost. They were I'm pretty sure they were a favorite, but they lost, I think, to the Bears, if I recall.
Yeah, they lost to the Bears.
Correctory. And yeah. If I may ask you real quickly, you're killing me with the Ravens. There's a couple other teams they could have put in there. Where are the 2011 Packers? 15-1 with Aaron Rodgers, a near unanimous MVP pick.
I'm looking to see if they made the list. They did not make his top 16. They did not make his top 16.
15-1? And they don't make that list?
Well, it's based on his measurement, DVOA, you know, evaluation of teams. You can't back off the 23 Ravens being a massive disappointment. Massive disappointment.
That was.
Not winning that AFC title game.
I was more disappointed in the 2006 Ravens with Steve McNair and the 2011 Ravens when Cundiff shanked or hooked, I guess.
Against New England.
Correct. I actually thought they were better all-around teams. That 23 team was really top-end defensively. They were a good offensive team, but look, you know, you can't have a good team and not have disappointments. You know that. You know, that comes with the territory. So I guess better to have those late-season disappointments than to be wondering where you're going to get ranking in the draft the upcoming year. But there you go. That 2011 Packers, that definitely should be listed in there somewhere, I would think. But
anyway, let me just say about your answer, the 84 Skins. So a couple of things about that 84 season. First of all, that was the beginning of the 85 Bears. You saw it defensively throughout that season. You saw it at the end when they came to RFK and completely dominated. The final score was not indicative of how they dominated that football game. Joe Theismann got sacked, I believe, 9 times. I'm looking it up right now in the game. 7 sacks in the game. 7. And he
did
was
go,
under siege the entire game.
Well,
what'd you say?
Were you at that game? Did you go? Did
yes,
you go
I was
that
at
game?
That game. I was definitely. Right, I was at that game. Know. Richard Dent dominated the game. In that game, and Walter Payton threw a touchdown pass on a halfback option. Steve Fuller was the quarterback that day. It wasn't even Jim McMahon, but they got shut out the next week.
Come on. You got to beat Jim Fuller. Come on. You got to be able
Steve
to beat
Fuller.
Jim Fuller.
Steve Fuller.
Steve Fuller, okay.
Yeah.
By the way, 2000 Ravens better than 85. Check any metric except for sacks. They outdid them.
I don't even need to look at it. The 85 Bears are one. The 85 Bears are one in terms of defense.
Right,
but what I was going to say about that 84 season is that the 49ers were the best team, and they went on to win the Super Bowl as a dominant Super Bowl winner. So the Redskins were not going to get through the 49ers. And the Bears were better because their dominant defense. Washington definitely took a step back that season. They started off, I mean, Marino came into RFK in the season opener and threw 5 touchdown passes and beat them. They lost to the Niners. They got blown out by the Giants at one point. Typical of the Gibbs teams, they figured it out by the end of the year. They won their final 4 games. They won the division on the season finale against the St. Louis Cardinals, Neil Lomax's Cardinals, and the Redskins played for a division title at RFK. And the Cardinals had a kick. Neil O'Donoghue had a kick to win it, which would have knocked the Skins into the wild card situation. That team was just nowhere near as good as the 83 team. Now, the 83 team's not in consideration for this.
You would know that, but you had Joe Gibbs and you had home game at RFK. That's two things that's always good.
Yeah, and the Bears smothered us. Thanks, Robert. Let's go to Mark in Largo. Mark, the best Skins team of all time not to make the Super Bowl.
You know what? You kind of stole my thunder with the 84 team, the 79 team clearly is that team. Okay, let's get that out of the way. 79 team, but the 84 team I would say is two, and I'm going to tell you why. We got boat raced by Miami in the first game, 38-24. I remember that game. That was just a painful game to watch. The second game was when they started to come back. And I'm going to tell you this right now, Kevin, and this is my honest opinion. The 49ers did not want to see the Redskins in the NFC title game because when the Redskins came back and they almost won that game, 30.
Yeah, they did almost win that game. You're
31.
Right. You're right about that.
They almost win that game. 49ers did not want to see them in that NFC title game. That was the one team that scared the hell out of them because they knew they figured them out just like the 49ers figured them out in the NFC title game. So it would have been a great matchup.
49ers were so good that year, though. They were so good.
They were.
15-1. Who'd they lose to that year? I don't even remember.
I agree. I agree, but here's the deal. They lost to Cleveland. No, yeah, they did. No, it was Pittsburgh they lost to. But here's the deal.
They lost to Pittsburgh, you're right.
There was a sigh of relief from Bill Walsh, just like it was a sigh of relief for Joe Gibbs, when they realized, you know what, if we beat Chicago, we don't have to go and play San Francisco in 87. So
It's kind of strange.
No, you're right. Obviously, a two-time NFC defending NFC champion trying to make it back to a third straight Super Bowl would have been a much tougher game at Candlestick for the 49ers than the young up-and-coming Bears were. There's no doubt. I just don't think, even with that said, because it's not so much about that, that 84 team was a good team, but it was a major step back team from the 83 team. Major step back offensively.
Without doubt.
Your phone's breaking up. Mark's phone is kind of breaking up, and here's the thing with Mark and Largo. It's already difficult at times to sort of follow the conversation. If we've got a phone issue, it just makes it much more difficult. So put him on hold. We'll get back to him. But let's go to Billy and Chantilly. Billy and Chantilly, best Redskins team to not make the Super Bowl. Go ahead.
Kevin, 79, I was 9 years old, so it didn't have the emotional impact. I know from my dad that was one of the great teams. But for me, I ran around in the woods after the game. It wasn't that. I feel totally vindicated, by the way. Just to our friends in the North, you'd have three more Super Bowls if they still had Flacco. So the way you started off the show, I think Flacco would have had at least three more Super Bowls with the Ravens. The greatest team, to answer the question, the greatest team that didn't make the Super Bowl is the 92 Redskins. This isn't even close. And I know 84 was good. That the year before they won the Super Bowl, they were 14-2. They crushed the Falcons. They crushed the Lions. They crushed the Bills. The next year, they go to San Fran, lose 20-13. They're winning that game if it's not for the fumble, and the young guys out there, they won't remember this. But then, Kevin, aside from that being, they would have won the Super Bowl, that 92 team, without a doubt.
I disagree. Keep in mind, Billy, it's not even about whether or not when they got to the postseason, they would. Is that the best team start to finish that didn't win the Super Bowl? That team struggled that year. They struggled. They were nowhere near what they were in 91. They lost a season finale against the Raiders, and the Raiders weren't good. The quarterback was Vince Evans that day. And they weren't even that good, and they backdoored their way into the postseason. Now, once they got into the postseason, the championship DNA, kept them, they beat a Minnesota team easily, and then they had a chance after they were being dominated by the 49ers in the first half, they had a chance to come back and win it. But that team all year long struggled mightily. They were never even remotely close to good offensively. They weren't.
Kevin, they had such a champion's heart. It was unbelievable.
They did. I agree with that.
The culmination of like the Gibbs era was like it was on display. And when they lost that game, I wasn't heartbroken. I was heartbroken for them because I knew that every one of those players gave everything they had to compete at that level. And then, Kevin, for me, what cascaded after that? I mean, like, 92 was the crescendo. 93,
that was it.
4-12.
That was it. We haven't been back anywhere close to it since. Yes.
Jack Kent Cook dies, the stadium in Maryland.
If I had told you because that was a tough loss to swallow because, I'll never forget. That game's available on YouTube. Mark Rippon sneaks one in for a touchdown to make it 17-13 in the fourth quarter. He gets up, he spikes the ball and lets out an F-bomb. And you see Jacoby, who checked into the game for Lachey. And you see they know they're going to win this game. And they force the Niners for a three and out. They're on the move. And the hole that opened up for B. Mitch, you and I could have run it in, and Rippon lost control of the ball when he went to hand it off. The field was a mess that day. But yeah, they were going to win that game. Now, would they have beaten Dallas in, you know, the following week in Texas Stadium in the NFC Championship game? Probably not. That Dallas team was really good, and they went in and laid it on the Niners the next week. But the overall team, they lost games during that year. I remember they played a Monday night game in New Orleans against the Saints, and it was hideous. They couldn't score. Like, literally, it was the opposite of the year before. So I wouldn't personally put the 92 Skins even on a short list. Now, in terms of their championship DNA and what they did at the end of the year, of course, that was fun to watch. All right, quick break. If you want to jump on, if you're there, I'll get to you, I promise. If you want to jump on with the best all-time Redskins team, Commanders team, Washington football team to not make the Super Bowl, I'll take a couple more calls on this. 301-230-0980, Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're also seen on our Team 980 YouTube channel.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.